Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you. Can you hear me well?
Yeah, okay. I'm okay. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine.
Oh, good. All right. Yeah, I just introduced you and what we were going to talk about tonight, but maybe you want to elaborate on that, because I talked about things that we mentioned last week, but also something to the effect that you wanted to talk about that, THAT.
Right, in capital letters.
Yeah, I was really, really looking forward to talking to you about that. And no pun intended.
Well, I was actually thinking of it as perhaps a chapter in our up-and-coming book that we're...
I thought it was wonderful, yeah. I'd like to talk about
it. I thought the title would really be good, like, look at that. Because I don't know if
there's
actually what that means. Now, when you have that, THAT, in a capital... form, it is creation done. It basically is what it is. It's you as the creator, the self, using form, substance, cosmic laws. You create something, and that creation goes into form, that it's so much identified that everyone knows what it is. You could just say, look at that. And when you say that, it identifies itself immediately. You don't even have to explain it. So thatness is actually worshipped in the Hindu religions, and in Sanskrit it means tavata. That means a period of activity is what it is. So when you have thatness, or let me put it this way, it's the fabric of the universe. It's how you use your energy, and know that when you point to something, when it's self-identified, you understand the truth behind it, because again, that form should be able to be identified by the knowledge that you carry with it. So you would say, look at that. And again, it's self-explanatory. And it doesn't matter what it is, but that-ness is a perhaps...
But if you say, what is that, you don't know what it is, actually.
Okay, you could say, look at that. Even if you say, what is that? That will show itself to you because you're asking, you're seeking.
Yeah, it's true.
You're not about the form or how form comes into manifestation, the form comes into manifestation due to the cause and effect of how you place your thought process on particular laws of the universe. See, so these laws really don't care how you think. We
right.
have to be the designers, the engineers, the creators to make the forms and the substance, as I called it before, the fabric of the universe, to bend and fold matter and light and thought processes and things of this nature to create what we're walking into. So we have many opportunities along the way. But as far as thatness goes, it takes us to the idea of whatever you're thinking. You have the opportunity to think of whatever you want next because we are creators. So when we go into the idea of thatness, it's us creating by our own thought process the manifestation of what we know, or you as an individual could recognize thatness, or, yeah, I know what that is. And again, I'm using it in a very fundamental physical the structure, that.
You know what's
that.
Funny what you're saying is because I use that term today, and I'll bet you millions of people did because of that toward one thing. I don't know if you saw in the early morning news they had that bear walking upright. It looked like he was a man. Did you see that?
Oh, I heard it. I wasn't really watching, but I heard it in the background. Yeah, they said that. Was that really a bear, or was that a hoax?
Yeah, it was very strange.
It was a bear?
Oh, yeah, cool. It was a bear, but he, I guess he had a hurt paw, and he was walking just like a man, upright, across the lawn, you know, just walking, strolling, you know, and very strange. But everybody, but I know myself, caught myself, and I said, what is that, you know? What is
right.
that?
You want to identify.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but, and in a way that explained itself. It was self-explanatory. It was a bear walking upright, you know. But the thing was is that you did say, what is that? Is as that you know, the mind trying to grasp the creation of something there and saying that is what that is. Do you see that? Do you hear that? Do you, you know, so, yeah.
Even in the Hindu religions, one of the chants, very well known, is "I am that I am." In other words,
I am
yourself.
That I am. Right.
Right. And that's. I'm not saying it in Sanskrit. I'm saying it in English. But
right. Oh,
I don't
no,
know.
I am the elephant.
There's an old.
But that's
a very popular chant too, where that comes in as. Your being, as you being one that can transform, let's say.
And I believe it's the I am that I am is the, you know, the I am is the great identifier of yourself.
Right.
And then that I am that I am, is really remarkable. It's a remarkable statement, actually. I am.
Yeah, it's an ancient.
I'm proving that I am, you know. I'm proving that I'm that, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, I was doing some research, just backing up a little bit into some of my archives on things that I had written before.
Right.
And over here I have that. It was it's a form of creation. And I wrote here, tell story. Okay, this is about trans-dimensional beings. I was something that I read. No, actually, I went to South Fallsburg, upstate New York, because there was an ashram up there, and there was a guru there named Gora Maya, and she would have classes or lectures or things of that nature, and it was great to study the Hindu understandings. And in a book that I bought at her ashram, there was a story of her teacher's teacher. Her teacher was Muktananda, and he was the first, let's say, Eastern teacher or knower or prophet or guru. I guess, yeah, he was called a guru, to come to the West and bring his information of thatness or teachings over to here. So at any rate, this is Muktananda's teacher. His name was Nityananda. And the story was that he was at a bus stop. And here's a man in a loincloth with a big belly. And and looking quite unusual. But this man supposedly is a great teacher, known as a great teacher and known as the teacher's teacher, like that. So he's at the bus stop, and the bus driver looked at his appearance, and he closed the door, and he just wouldn't let him on. So he went to the next bus stop, and when he was at the next bus stop, it said in the story that Nityananda was standing there. So how did he get from there to there without using this trans-dimensional understanding of form and thatness? Now, in this case, again, the bus driver didn't let him on. He goes down the road a few miles, and there's Nityananda again. And the bus driver finally lets him on the bus because he was frightened by him, because how did this being, how did this person do this? You know, it was basically he was teaching the man a lesson. But now, in further understanding the molecular structure in a cosmic sense, I'm using molecular because it's physical. I could also say the structure of your astral or refined bodies and things of that nature. But how this happens, going to the transdimensional, moving from one dimension to another, and you could start right here in the physical dimension. You know, you get in your car and you're going from one place to another. That's traveling. But in traveling with the mind and the body and the thatness and getting out of form and back into form, that's called decorporation of the molecular structure. That means you, by thought, you decompose your whole molecular structure. Energy follows thought, remember now. And you take that thought and you place that thought where you want to be, or you place your subtle body or even your physical body, in this case with this great being here, Nityananda. He was able to do that in a physical sense. So here you have your transdimensional. So now you close your eyes, you're sending this decorporation, like just in a way people who have attempted, let's say, astral travel and things like that, you just don't think about even taking your body. Just think of your body somewhere else, your mind, all of you, everything that you are, and send that out in front of you like that. So when I say in front of you, just send it out. Send it out on the thought process. The laws take care of themselves. And then what happens is the decorporation of the body. And then the structure, energy follows thought, it restructures its form again. It's the folding and bending again of space and light and matter. When I use the word fabric, because it was really unusual that they even learned that air had matter in it, you know, in the ancient times of Alexander and the libraries over there and the great minds that were there. They were astonished that they pulled energy out of the air from steam and air energy and power and things of that nature. But getting back to the thatness, the decorporation of the molecular structure is actually letting go so much that you can actually step outside of that which you know without being in fear. You know, and energy always follows thought. This is a law. This law, as I was saying earlier, these laws don't really care what you think. They just do their job. It's like having a great highway. Let's just even say we can say I-95. People are pretty familiar with that corridor, at least from north to south. And this particular structure, this corridor of travel, doesn't really care what kind of vehicle you're using. It doesn't care if you have a bus, a skateboard, a limo, or whatever. This is the conduit through which those your cars or your vehicle can pass through. Well, it's the same thing with these trans-dimensional beings, or finding many things multiplied in many places, aspects like that. So in the ancient writings of many of the Hindu or Eastern philosophies, they're always talking about flying all over the place and even having holy wars and things of that nature. But when we spoke earlier, there was an interesting thing that I wanted to bring up, and it was about what I said last week with the Hopi Indians. Rob, if you're out there listening, you asked me if I knew the prophecies of the Hopi Indians, and I quickly jumped in. I said, yes, the Kachina doll, blah, blah, blah. Well, that was an error. The Kachina doll belongs to the Zulu tribe. The Hopi Indians had a whole other thing going on, but it still had the seed children, the fifth root race, the pictograms of bipedal beings on them, the idea that the Hopi Indians, they were the Hopi tribe is northeastern Arizona. And in one of their prophecies, Leo, we spoke about this a little bit earlier, they called about, they said that this change comes about when the blue star appears. And as the, and then it goes on and it says, and the blue star crashes upon the earth. And what came to me earlier, and we spoke a little bit about it, I was thinking of the blue star as perhaps maybe the flag of Israel. Not that I'm making a prophecy or anything like that, but that is a blue star. And when it says, and it crashed upon the earth, I'm wondering if that has anything to do with missiles and things of that nature.
That prophecy stated that people would be attracted to that blue star. People would be would move to that blue star. They'd be gravitated to transcend their whole body and their minds, and everything would just go right to that blue star. And,
it almost sounds like it's a craft of some sort, really, if you get deep into
seems
the...
Seems like that. You know, like it's a huge, huge alien craft that's come back, you know, to... And you know, it could be Nibiru, you know, it could be that 3,600-year, you know, orbit. And it comes back. There's been a lot of talk about this as far as could be Nibiru, could be the, Anunnaki. Yeah. And it's very strange. But I don't, in that Hopi, they just said it was a planet, it was a star. And then I've talked to others who believe that it was a comet, and he sees a comet, a great
right.
comet.
It's
yeah.
Jupiter. Perhaps that was it, yeah.
Yeah.
It broke.
I remember when George introduced me to this guy, Donaldson, I believe in him, and his book was called The Comets, something to that effect. And we talked about it, and we had the guy on the show, and he wrote this book, a fascinating book on relating comets to these incredible catastrophes that have hit the Earth and changed, you know, the Earth, and he's saying that he said that the blue planet, or it could be a comet, based on revelation, based on what, you know, prophecies have stated, everything that what a comet is seems to be everything that these prophecies are stating.
Leo? Because when this truth shows itself, it will show itself in any form.
So if you need
the form of a comet, it will show itself in the form of a comet, the form of a flag, the form of whatever form it wants to take, so you know that that exists.
But it says
so.
That,
you're,
you know,
you're absolutely.
Yeah,
it will. It will show itself in the form of a comet.
Yeah.
It will show itself in prophecies.
Yeah,
all of.
It'll light up the entire planet, okay, in this blue light, and as it comes into our orbit, and we will be. It didn't say it's going to collide with us, according to what I read in the Hopi prophecy. It wasn't to collide, but mankind would be would go to that planet, okay? We would transcend. Like another dimension into, it sounded like ascension, onto that planet where the other was the red planet, which was our planet, because I believe they felt that this red planet was going to be on fire, you know, essentially. We would be, there'd be tremendous problems here on Earth, environmental problems. And he just saw the red planet. It could be Mars, too. But
Mars is known as red planet.
Isn't
there another prophecy or a pictograph, I believe it's the Hopis, where it shows two parallel lines and humanity continues by planting the earth? And
I don't know. I didn't see that, honestly.
Okay, I'm not sure if it's the Hopi, but there is a pictograph, and it shows parallel lines, like one on top of the other, and one line shows... kind of like technology where man goes or humanity goes off and off this grid. And when you're on the bottom line, the parallel line to that, it shows humanity planting corn or planting seeds, something of this nature. So right at that point would be this pictograph is depicting, all right, we're going out of the fourth race into the fifth root race, and their prophecy here is that... like we're going back to the star children, like remaking the world. That's really what it is. When they talk about I'm going backwards a little bit about the Star Children. We talked a little bit about the Hopi prophecy. But what the Navajos do with their star beings and their Star Children, it is said that the Star Guards came to their tribe, and they brought Star Children with them. They mated with the Navajo women, and they raised the hybrids up to the age of six. Then the Star Guards came back, and they returned all their children, age six, not all of them, returned them to the Star Guards. They picked who they wanted. Those left behind, the children that were left behind, now this is the Navajo, they were called the sub-star children, to bring knowledge and heal mankind or to make over. That was their job. The Star Children also are known as enhanced human function individuals. So it is the Navajo that they had the star beings mate with the Navajo women, give birth to hybrids. The hybrids were taken away and then returned. Those that were left behind were called the sub-star children, to make over the earth. All right, now why am I going around like that? Going back to form, creation, the story of Nityananda, the travel, all of those things. But I think knowing of the children that are here now, the new age children or things of this nature, you'll see that they will master this trans-dimensional aspect. They already come in with the higher vibration, so they're more sensitive to the other dimensions, and they have greater access. They're still so pure before human people get a hold of them.
You know what's funny is that today I heard that the 14 and 15 year old kids are the most digitally advanced. Digitally advanced. They're the most computerized, most knowledgeable and adapted people in the world at that age group. 14 to 15 year olds have seemed to, have encompassed the entire technical digital world.
And perhaps if they can fly their own spaceships and things like that, who knows?
Who knows? I mean, they get into these simulators or whatever. Who knows what? It's all imagination, and it's all like if they can break through it.
We spoke a little bit too about psychotronics briefly, and I have a psychotronics newsletter. And it's funny that you say that because the psychotronics. What does that mean? First of all, the word psychotronics. It's the use, or let's say, taking energies and discovering what you can find within those energies. And when I say energies, that's exactly what I mean, the energies of the planet, outer planets. So the psychotronics individuals are working with, like, universal dynamics. They're the worker bees. They have an idea, and they take this idea or this knowing of the cosmic laws, and they make the mechanics of it. They make the machines for Curly and photography. They make the machines for x-rays and things of that nature. Now, I pulled out a very old newsletter that I had, and it's spring of 1984. And I was looking for a website, and I realized that in 1984 we didn't even have the Internet. So I can give you on this, and it's very, especially you Tesla lovers out there, listeners, some of this work seems almost ancient because we're using it already. But these are the worker bees of mechanics, of the science behind the energies. And those of you who like it, maybe you might want to Google. It's called the United States Psychotronic Association. It's USPA. Now, here's how you spell psychotronics. P-S-Y-C-H-O. T-R-O-N-I-C-S. Now, through this group, Leo, I met so many different individuals, everything from Curly and photography research to the Palmer Institute of Weather working with Oregon Energy. So I was used in many research aspects from psychotronics, and then that's where I met a lot of different individuals that we both mutually know as well. So that's a little bit when we spoke a little bit about that. So Google that, United States Psychotronic Association, and it'll bring you up to date. Like I said, this is an older one, and you're going to find works and books. It's a whole other language in a sense in order for me to teach anything with psychotronics, although they were
It's called the webpage. Do you know what the webpage, USPC?
I don't know what the webpage is because they didn't have it at that, but at USPA,
okay.
It's United States Psychotronics Association.
USPA, okay.
It's a wonderful group to know. I grew through them. Literally, and I met great individuals that helped me, too, on my research.
USPA, they got the Powerlifting Association, the Parachute Association, Powerlifting,
Then use the word psychotronics. You want me to spell it again?
Yeah, I've got it. Hang on, I'll put that in.
This is a non-profit organization, by the way.
Oh, that's all right. Okay, sorry.
The titles you'll find in their writings are... mapping leptons and quarks and things of that nature. So it's another whole language. But you'll find titles or writings in here about the crystal life, the way of the waves. We were talking about the waves of energy that we go through and the octaves and things of that nature.
Here's another one, role
of the mind amongst the waves. And basically their theory is universal dynamics. That's really, the mechanics of taking these things and putting them together. Here's another one, expansion of the 8x8 matrix. So if you're really deep into knowing the vibrations, this is an interesting group, and they have great speakers, great books you can buy from it. And again, I'm reading from a 1984, but they were way ahead of their time, so we probably caught up to some of this. They have one in here that's very interesting, Leo, if I may.
Everything I'm reading here, almost everything on psychotronics has to do with warfare or weaponry. Psychotronic is a complicated subject. Not everyone agrees what it is about, but mind control.
You're in the physical aspect of psychotronics.
Yeah. No, I know. It's just that I'm looking at this and there's tons of results for psychotronics on Google here. Hey, even the Soviet Union had $1 billion psychotronic arms thing.
They were the bees, as I said, the worker bees. They took what
really
they knew how the laws worked, and they made machines prove it. In fact, there was a fellow I worked with, Joe Bonfigliario. He's in spirit now. And he had built a machine to prove that psychic energy exists. So one year he had a show at the Whole Life Expo in New York. I don't even remember what year it was, but it was probably the 80s when I was involved with a lot of the psychotronic stuff. And he asked if I could participate in this experiment he was doing with this machine. It was basically a check that you had auras and things like that. Now, we're going back into the 80s, anyway. At any rate, I did this this process for him, and the machine showed that, I had a higher level of ability to be a clairvoyant, a psychic, this and that. And he ends up, and he says, well, now we can prove that my machine proves that it can check psychic energy. And I says, no, you mean you needed a psychic to prove your machine works, you flip it around to him. But at any rate, these are the individuals that build
Soviet Union had $1 billion psychotronic arms race with the U.S., and that involved remote control viewing and non-local physics, so unconventional research in the USSR. But I remember in the 60s they were talking about this stuff, especially remote viewing and whatnot. But this is it's quite something, really. I don't know if it can be.
It's very interesting if people have the time and want to know the analysis of what they come up with. And in fact, as I was flipping through this this newsletter, there was a book in here that talked about the Russians' advancement on psychotronics. but these
campaigns are typically dismissed. In the mid-1990s, rumors of secret research into psychological warfare have led to a number of conspiracy theories. Campaign groups in Russia, U.S., alleged the government, so on and so forth. But it says that psychotronic weapons against them to torture them, track their movements, or control their minds. So these campaigns are typically dismissed by psychologists as being a delusional response to auditory hallucinations similar to the accounts of alien abductions. And he said the word has also been used to describe some medical therapies for helping patients suffering from psychosomatic illnesses and stress. So,
psycho relates to mind and thought, so that's why that stuff's going to come up first.
So,
but yes, controlling the mind was definitely both Russian and American, by the way. The idea.
Do you think now? I mean, there's so much to the psychological warfare. I mean, you know, it's just all. I mean, even this Ebola, you know, scare is a psychological prepping for
still
the
scare on humanity.
Yeah, you know. Say that again.
I said instilling fear upon humanity.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, trying to confuse them with some other thing, you know, this mass scare. I have a tendency not to believe anything that's out there that doesn't make any sense, you know. And I'm a conspiracy theorist. I can't help myself because you just know they're conspiring against you, you know. And somewhere
there's too
many
layers to unfold.
Yeah.
I mean, think about that. We're just here on this planet trying to really have our communication with the forces that be that govern us, let's say it that way, right? So, and there's so much folding and unfolding and covering and uncovering and all of that. And this is right here in our own governmental structure as we are just human beings upon this planet. Now, could you imagine the unfolding of the universe, although none of it is hidden, supposedly? You know, there's secret, but when you seek it, supposedly it shows itself to you. And I'm sorry about the word supposedly.
Yeah,
I know it
does. You must have heard, but I was wondering if you ever studied any of his work. Edward Bernays, you know, the guy who invented Wall Street, not Wall Street, but Fifth Avenue, you know, the advertising. And big publicity. He was the guy that he took. He was the nephew of Freud, all right. And he used all of Freud's findings, all right, and created a public relations firm based upon what drives the human psyche, all right, and how to create these big campaigns, political campaigns and advertising campaigns to make people believe anything, you know, and how to do it. That was like the beginning of the concept of mind control, mass mind. That was in the 30s, in the 20s, actually,
right.
20s and 30s, when he came up with that. And then he taught everybody, he taught all the governments how to create these massive, you want to go to war? This is how you pump up the nation to go to war. You want them to eat more bread or more milk or more whatever. You know, he would start ad campaigns for the milk industry, for the corn, you know, for, cattle industry, for anything, you know. This is how you push the public to buy, you know. And basically every psychological operation, against our country and mostly around the world, are based on his theories, you know, that he proved all work, you know, and it's Goebbels saying that, all you have to do is tell the biggest possible lie you can, and it'll be so outrageous that people will believe it, you know, and because it's so outrageous that people will believe it. And then you say it over and over and over and over again until they do. And that's why mass media will always say the same thing over and over. That's why you know, you'll hear an advert, somebody advertising, some product, that 100 times in a week, you know, you see that ad on TV, boom, 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 must be good, must be real, must, you know, I'm a great guy, you know, vote for me. So it's mass mind control.
I'm a little guilty of that myself, because one night I started to delve into the different levels within ourselves, like the self-hypnosis, and going into different arenas and things like that, that I went to a program that was called the White Program. It was using your hypnotic voice and making statements, and these statements were such as, you would say something, dealing is no good for your karma. You'd say things like that, right? And those were some of the words that you had to use, right? And what they did is they put elevator music over it. It's called white sounds. Now, these people don't even know they're being programmed. You know, so my voice was used, because I am a hypnotherapist as well, but it was a job, you know, and I did all these statements. And these are things that are placed in elevators, you know, in your greatest stores, you know, your biggest stores and things like that. So music's being pumped in, you know, to where all these individuals are shopping around, and they're being programmed not to shoplift. They're being programmed to buy certain, make sure they see sales items, you know, things like this. So even unknown to the people, they're being, you know, programmed, you know. It was a little shame for a while, but I didn't stay in that very long. I used voiceovers for other things, but that was called white. I know they probably have a different name nowadays. That was a long time ago.
So it was subliminal programming is what it was.
That's the word, subliminal. There you go.
Subliminal.
Thanks, Leo. I went through all that in one word. I love when you jump.
It's actually be illegal.
It was illegal, you know. I mean, now it's illegal, but at the time.
Yes.
But you can find it even on, you know, these infomercials. Yeah. You hear all that music, that loud music in the background they always have. There's someone back there telling you to buy this.
But
so we're always being, I mean, we're programmed.
You see it in movies, though. You know, companies will pay big money for their product to be seen in a movie.
Right.
You know, Coca-Cola or Pepsi or, you know, some Wrangler jeans or, you know, whatever somebody's wearing or, you know, so whatever, there's a trade name of some sort. They pay big money for that because it's a mind, you know, their brand is being associated with this actor or with this movie, and this movie is telling you to, you know, it's all subliminal. And there's not really anything you can do about it. Not really. especially
be aware of it, you know, make sure
the mind is only capable of accepting 24 frames of information per second, okay?
But that's what they're telling you. That's what they know. Academia is like, right?
No, but they've tested it and found that the conscious mind, can only pick up 25 frames of information per second. So if you're watching a movie or you're listening to a song or something, all right, that's what they did with, remember the Beatles turned their album backwards, you know what I mean? And Rolling Stones did that, you know, they started to put messages on the back of their, if they played the album, they found that they could deliver these messages because the mind is able to the mind will absorb, the subconscious will absorb all this information, whereas the conscious mind can only absorb 24 bits of information per second. Okay, per second. So everything after that, the subconscious picks up. All right. So that's why when you go to sleep, you can be overwhelmed. Like, for instance, I get, like, in a place like a shopping mall, I get overwhelmed in those places, you know, especially around Christmas time and stuff. Holy God, there's, like, so much stuff, and you
absorb.
Yeah, you just kind of shut down. You know, you stop at a restaurant and just kind of, you know, take it in. But it's like, you know, the it's the same way with music, or the same way with movies. You can absorb this information at a much greater speed. Like these kids' movies now, they're throwing all kinds of symbols into there. They're throwing all kinds of sexual.
Right. They don't even know they're being programmed, right?
No, they don't even know it. All right. And but you see it as an adult. You can see it, and even as an adult, you miss it. But you know, it's isn't that cute? You know, but it's not. You're being programmed and programmed and programmed and programmed to think a certain way about something, and then even though it may not be, you know, it may not be at all, you know. So I don't know. I was just getting around to the mind controlling aspects of everything are out there, and ever since I realized this, I think God, I don't know, maybe I must have been 12 or 13 years old before it all dawned on me. That not all of it, but some of it dawned on me that, this stuff doesn't make sense. I'm being lied to here. There's something wrong. There's more to this than they're saying. You know what I mean? It's when your intuition starts to kick in and say, something wrong here, you know? And then you have to start following your own voice, your own method of, you know, finding truth if you can. Because, boy, you realize that there's not a whole lot of truth out there. You know, given to you by your government or by your schools or by, you know, by your churches or anybody, you know. It's all dogma. It's all propaganda. It's all meaning designed to make you think in one certain way and not think for yourself, you know. So
that's right there, thinking for yourself, because that's where you can put the practical application of that which you know, that which you understand laws to be, and put them into practice. Knowing them is not enough. Practical applications, what's needed.
Wonder,
if everything is illusion.
Wonder of this time frame that we live in is that all of that information is accessible on the Internet somewhere.
That's
books, everything. But back when we had to go to a library, we had to go to newspapers or old bookstores or something, you know, to find any of this information. Okay, anything dealing with the occult, anything dealing with, you remember? I mean, my God,
sure.
Back in the 60s and 70s, if you were dealing with the occult, you were crazy, you know? Or stay away from that person. You know, go down.
Groups in people's living rooms and in their basements, you know, the basements of the church and things like this, so we could have together. Everything was hidden. And I had a chuckle when I went to, and I took the Psychotronics newsletter. I literally was looking for a website or a web page, and I'm saying, oh my goodness, didn't even have the internet. So it did, what you said, it gave me a chuckle. I started laughing a little bit, but to be able to put those things into
action. Everybody had to depend on somebody. Like back in the 60s and 70s, I remember, because that's when the most radical period, where, you know, people used to make thousands of mimeographs. Remember the mimeograph? You know.
I had a mimeograph machine.
You know, you have a mimeograph, and boom, 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 you know, and you put out, you know, as many pages of stuff.
Dittos. That's what I learned in high school, how to type a ditto.
Ditto, yeah, right. But it was like, and we had many.
Shorthand.
Shorthand.
And,
that's
funny.
Yeah.
But we surely have come a long way in the idea of unfolding and growing.
We really have. So far.
There's definitely those who are thirsty for what do we do with this unfolding? How do we use that which we know? Because you can have it, but how do you put it into application? That's another key. Your light, you know. I mean, light can't be polluted, but we could pollute our thought process where you can't see the light. Those are the illusions you're talking about, or the lies, or whatever, the conspiracies, all these things that are thrown in front of us. Look this way, no, look that way. Well, when you in, really where you want to look is you ask yourself for the city of self. Close your eyes before you go to sleep at night and say, take me to the city of self, you know, your own self. What do you have in your city, you know? Check it out. Make sure you don't have gloom and doom and danger in those thought processes, or too much fear. You know, and I said light pollution. What I mean by that is don't throw thoughts out there that enhance your fear or the idea of that it's not accessible or that it's the end of the world and that kind of fear and stuff like
right,
that.
Right, right. No,
process. Yeah, take me to the city of myself. And very slowly, when you build up those energies and those thought processes, that's if you ponder on thoughts like this. If it isn't your thing, don't even attempt it because it's not going to work. You know,
that's right.
Do what you know your truth to be, but put it into application so that you can see the manifestation of it. And that's the whole idea of getting beyond how one can program someone else is understand your own programming, understand what type of thoughts that you've been using on your journey. You know, when you're working with thoughts.
Yeah, no, that's true. There was a time, you know, I could tell, where I was so, I was so involved with worldly issues that, you know, it nearly killed me. And I didn't realize it until it happened that, my God, I was right after I wrote my book and everything was out and, we were really, really involved with so many issues on the radio and public speaking and everything. But I got so wound up in this stuff that I didn't realize it was killing me. It was actually killing me because my mind was being focused on such negativity, such horrible stuff going on everywhere, you know, and seeing through these things and just starting to look at them so sarcastically and so cynically that I had no joy, looking at things anymore. Until after that period of time that I was, was sick, and when I got over it, I only got over it because I started to see daylight again. I started to see things that around me. I started to think of things much more positively. I started to look at, by the time I was healed, it was almost springtime, and I could see the flowers. I could see everything around me, and I just became, everything became such so much more in the present.
I started
looking at it, and through nature, I picked up a very, very, very positive feelings, and was able to give up that a great deal of that negativity that I was carrying along with me, and it kind of left me, and it was good for a couple years, 2-3 years, and then the burden started coming back again, and I could feel it, and I tried to get rid of it again. And I found that every time that I can get rid of it is when I concentrate purely on doing something like on nature or photography or art or something to get my mind.
The key here, Leo, that you investigated it and you took interest towards your inner dimensions, like you felt it. And once you did that, it's like being in an elevator. It goes to all the floors. You have your infrastructure, perhaps in the basement, and the second floor, maybe it's a warehouse. The third floor, that you can display
That's when I started to realize that about the interdimensional aspect of me, where I could keep going and going and going and going further down, or further up, or further inward. And I found myself wanting to go further and further inward because I kept discovering things about me and discovering things that allowed me to free myself from my physical ailments, free myself from my worries, free myself from my the issues that I was facing, and focus on something much more positive and much more wonderful and much more unifying, and then I realized I started to feel so much better about everything, feel much better about myself,
almost becoming that which you didn't like. That's what happens.
I was becoming what I hated.
Right, you are becoming what we dislike. Right.
Yeah. You go, wow, my God, I can't do this.
And none of us, we know where to put it. You can use it as fertilizer now, so that's good.
Yeah, I use it as fertilizer. Because you went through a horrible time, too. And, you know, and you
certainly did.
And it came, you
I was
back.
Cheated back and forth from from what you would call the, you know, well, we go to the other side almost every night when we sleep anyway. But the idea of not having control of the astral body, not having control of the physical body. I was ill with the bacterial infection that entered my body. And with it, I was floating in and out from in and out of my body. And in one particular situation, I saw a school bus in front of me. And the school bus, the doors opened, you know, and I got in, and my grandson was sitting, you know, at the wheel of the bus, and he goes, "Come on in, silly grandma." That's what they call me. And then I looked, he goes, "We have the whole team here." And I looked to the left, and it was my other grandson, who was 3. And behind him, they were all dressed in doctor's uniforms and things like this. And my grandson was dressed in his baseball thing. But then I don't remember anything after that. But what they said is that I couldn't breathe, you know, and they had these masks and things on me. But I truly was looking for, Leo, honestly, I was looking for the light at the end of the tunnel. You know, you hear all this about down the tunnel. I didn't have anything like that, but I didn't have drugs yet either with this particular experience. I had just gotten into the hospital, so it wasn't anything like morphine or drug-induced vision. I couldn't breathe, and that's what I saw. But I eventually started breathing again with these biological systems they have, so that you can breathe and things like that. But you know, everybody's going to experience a different thing when they cross over. Now, I'm not saying I lived there, but this was an experience I had. I didn't feel. I didn't even think I wasn't thinking about crossing over. I wasn't thinking I was dead. I wasn't thinking anything like that. It was just an experience that I did have. But it was the grandchildren that sent me back, in a sense, for lack of a better word. But you had that experience, too, the concern about, you know, am I here? Am I there? Am I supposed to? Am I doing the right things? I think many times, like what happened with Edgar Cayce when he started doing readings and people were asking him for how to gain financially through his readings and things like that, he started to get ill, and he actually stopped all his readings. And once he stopped that, he started to heal again. And it wasn't until later on, like I said, one of the children were burned or something of that nature, and maybe it was Yulin, his son, something like that. And he healed him through the spirit readings, and then he started doing the work again. But the point is not using the energy in a most positive way. Use the energy where it can enhance not only your life but the people around you. Your listeners might want to try something like my increasing mental facilities are for serving humanity better, or my increasing psychic abilities are for serving humanity better. It's just like it's almost like a brake on a car, because when you get involved in some of these energies, like you said, Leo, you became obsessed. You know, you start to become that where your thought process is gathering the most energy. It's like when we have our cosmic assets, our bank accounts of previous lifetimes. Those are assets. But there's also negatives, too. So if we get involved or addicted or anything.
Oh, yeah, I found myself becoming so self-righteous in my own convictions, you know, on things that I wouldn't, I was intolerable. If you didn't make sense to me, then I couldn't, you know, I couldn't relate. And you know, because I was so
fitting your ideology.
Yeah, I was so overwhelmed with my own ideology, but you know, which was against everyone else's ideology. You know, so it's like it took me forever to understand that, because for so many years I had just done. I've just been an activist, just been reporting things, just recording and reporting and getting involved and exposing these things to every on radio and TV and stuff, and just trying in documentaries and books. And I just tried to bring forward okay, what I saw is truth, and what I saw is happening, and what I felt had to be said. And then and after I did that, I would have some release, and I'd feel good about, you know, after I finished an article or work or television show or radio show. But, and I still do, I still feel good, but I'm not as, I mean, one thing that really bothered me, for instance, recently was the Palestinian issue. It really, really bothered me to see what was going on there. And nobody was paying attention. I mean, they were, but nothing was happening, and they're allowing these people to be slaughtered. And I wrote a number of these things, the articles, and wrote this and that, and it kind of helped me because it made me say, okay, here I've vented my feelings, I've vented facts, I've vented, you know, this. And but what was happening was I found myself getting too down and dirty on it, too overwrought by it, overwhelmed by it. You know, just the thought of these children being murdered, just a horrible vision. So I had to change around. And thank God for Lila, because she has many, many, many flowers and many, many, she's a beautiful garden over here. So, and she insists that I take these pictures and immortalize her flowers. I told her I'm going to immortalize your flowers on my website. And so what happens is I take, when I get into this nature appreciation and developing these pictures and taking these pictures, it kind of cleanses my system. It kind of cleanses my mind, and you know, I become overwhelmed with these wonderful, with, you know, rather than visualizing and seeing the worst of humanity and the worst of the world, I see, you know, I focus on the best of the world, you know, the beauty of the world, the beauty of what's going on, and it brings me back to a state.
Brings
of,
you back to the origin of self.
That's
because,
right.
Remember, that because you saw beauty, it comes from the origin of self. And what you did was you extinguished the fire of dislike or the fire of hate or disdain, all the things that bothered you. What was happening is as you're writing these things, and yes, you're testimonial to it, but as you're doing that, that energy is all built up. You know, you keep building it and building it, that it becomes your wardrobe almost.
That's right.
What you said, I don't like the way these clothes fit. I'm grouchy, you know. Let me go out.
Yeah, right, I'm the grouchy cat, you know.
Out in the garden, because it's garden, you know, it extinguishes the fire. And what happens is there's such a vast array of energy. It's an inherent ability that we all have, but we don't always tap it. You had to get to the point that it became what you would call critical mass, you know, to the point like, oh, I'm becoming this, you know, and I'm wearing it, and I can't shake it.
Exactly.
Thank God for Lila is right. You know, she brought you to nature, and nature is natural. And, again, it comes from origin. So, extinguishing. You put it into application, Leo. That's the big thing here.
Oh, yeah.
You know, your inspiration of where you're going, you know, you're evolving beyond, okay, I recognize that this was not a healthy situation that I'm looking at, but I'm a healthy person, you know, because I was ill too. I'm not even going to go into the details of my journey or anything like that.
I
know exactly what can, not exactly, but I know what happened to me in the aspects with the same thing, absorbing, you know, doing a lot of healing. It's just, it's incredible because we also need to filter, we meaning those who like to enhance the journey, not only for yourself, but others who use knowledge as their currency, you know, for the universe, things of that nature.
Yeah.
So using this energy and the inheritability that you had, you were able to release yourself from a demise or becoming that ideological thought process that you felt was so important to do. And you did recognize that. You put all those thoughts out there. But now it's
I didn't realize, honestly, I didn't realize what it was doing to me. until it was almost too late, you know. And you know, your mind, wherever that mind goes, your body follows. And you mentioned thought, where you know, energy follows thought. And boy, I'll tell you, it sure does. You know, and it can destroy you, or it can make you wonderful. You know, make your life wonderful. It's just the way that you think. It's all in the thought. Sorry.
Yeah, when you your old way of thinking, and then
What
is it? It opens to new realities.
It does. It really does. And you wake up and you say, "Geez," and you feel yourself expanding, you feel yourself enlightening, you feel the light coming through your mind and through your body, and you know, your aching bones or muscles don't hurt, and you just feel 100% better, and you know, and that to me is ascension. That to me is you know, ascension consciousness. And I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say that it's the cosmic man slowly being born into advancement,
right,
or ascension, just as you were going to say.
You know,
I was on the thought process. Go ahead.
You were talking about cosmic assets, you know, before, and it's so true, because years ago I read an essay by Ralph Emerson, and he said, it's called On Compensation, and he says, you, no matter what you do in life, he says, there's compensation for it. And he says, it's the law of compensation, universal law. But he says, and he ends the essay by saying that you can never be cheated, all right, because there is a universal compensation. And that, you know, if you put your, he says, if you have doubts that you're being cheated or being slighted or not getting your just compensation in whatever you're doing, whether it be your reading or, you know, your writing, or you're a doctor or a lawyer or whatever you are, but, you know, it doesn't matter what you are, you know, he says, put your faith in God as the exchequer, okay, as the accountant, okay?
punch list.
yeah, exactly, that he's keeping the records, and the records will always balance out, all right? They'll balance out. And you're, you know, it's essentially, we're here for a reason, and I don't know, good, bad, or indifferent, everything's being counted, and you know, the more you give, the more you get, in one way or another. So, to me, doing what I do with this show and with the writing and with everything, it's just, I know there are people out there getting it, and there are thousands and thousands and thousands of people that prove it every day. When I look at my web stats and stuff, and I have thousands and hundreds of thousands of people that are listening to our programs and reading our stuff and doing, you know, and what, looking at my pictures, and, you know. And it just makes me feel good, because, you know, it must, for people to respond to this or listen to something or be involved with something, there has to be some kind of connective tissue there. There has to be some kind of truth or some kind of voice or some kind of something that they're responding to, you know. Because you don't get thousands of visitors a day to any website unless there's something there. You know, either it's pornography or it's spirituality. But, you know, you get that many people, and I'm so grateful that I get that kind of audience. And it's an international audience, Maria. I mean,
those that are seeking.
Yeah,
those that are seeking, and you're working universal dynamics right here. I know we are,
and I'm so happy that you're with me doing this, and that you're able to share this information, because it's so incredible, and it's so enlightening. I mean, I'll bet you we're probably the only show on radio in tonight, for sure, anywhere, that's talking about that. the thatness of being. I guarantee you,
yeah,
nobody on radio is talking about that tonight.
That's right. And once you identify thatness, it almost becomes humorous when you hear people talk and they'll say, look at that, you know, and it just brings another tickle and a smile to you because you can see thatness in another whole dimension. It's multi-dimensional. See?
That's it. That's it. And you really feel good that something resonates, that resonates with you, and that you feel like you learned a little something or you appreciate more than you did before. And with that, I want to thank you. We're already past the hour, but I want to thank you for being with me tonight and sharing everything you did. And we hope to have you again next week, and we'll be talking about, I don't know.
Distance. I have other stuff.
Is there such a thing as thisness as opposed to thatness?
Actually, I wrote an article called Thought and That. You know, how your thought brings you to that. But this is like a cousin of that. How about that?
Well, this
are the cousins. They're the adjectives, you know.
Well, this, that, these, and those, remember?
And, yes.
This, that, yes. These, and those. Were they demonstrative adjectives or something? Or something like that. I don't know. But,
But again, it's always a pleasure to work with you, Leo. And bringing up all my archives, it reminds me of that which I already knew, and sometimes I am.
Could you read that article next week for us?
I can read that article. Definitely.
Yeah, that article on the or whatever it was.
Hmm?
This,
I'd be happy to do that.
What was the name of it?
Thought and That.
I'd love to hear that. So,
and when you say this, that's the cousin.
This is the cousin, right? So let us look forward to doing that next week and going over some other amazing things, okay?
Well, it's always been a pleasure. I say hello to Lila, and I'm looking forward to it. Take care, Leah.
Listeners. All right.
Thanks, man. Good night now.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was Maria. And we are going to say goodnight, and thanks for joining us. And join us again next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights right here. And hope you enjoyed the show. Good night, everybody. I got to get to my music here. It's a little off. But I will get to that. And good night, everyone.